thanks for the introduction. And I thank all the speakers agreed to be this informal workshop. And actually, I hope every year we can have a chance to get together to discuss ITCP. So today, I'm talking about some model study, namely this J1, J2 Heisenberg model on spread lattice with anti-magnetic interactions. So it's kind of some model people be interested for a long time, but kind of indirectly related to high TC, because people argue this frustration induced by J2 might be mimic the frustration induced by the hot loop. So but we do some new variational method called a tensor for the dark state, which can in principle handle the model even with sign problem. So yeah, I just report some new results based on this method. And I would like to thank my collaborator Li Wang, who is postdoc from Caltech, and Xiaogang Wang here, and Frank Bushman from University of Vienna. This conjecture for the DQCP.
This is really a picture from my talk. I want you to have a good talk.
Sophia proposed this concept. I just saw a couple of words you mentioned in IDTQs, maybe something in this week. Basically, am I able to describe this fundamental behavior of this matter? In this sense, this kind of quantum critical point might be relevant even for high TC footprint, although at the moment we don't have very solid evidence for this, because it's kind of at zero temperature screened by superconductivity. It's very hard to really detect the zero temperature behavior. And also it's hard from any kind of model study so far. But actually there are much simple theory and model if we just focus on spin system. So this is a paper first by these famous guys. And basically the key point first proposed by Sophia, basically this multiple changes events, if we kind of only changes by 4 on a square lattice, then this instant effect becomes dangerous irrelevant, and there's a chance for deconfined quantum criticality in this kind of CP1 model. Not all the people here are familiar with the CP1 model, but let me briefly just tell you the idea. So basically, this Z field is kind of some decomposition of this N field. So basically, in the slave particle language, you can roughly think about it's kind of carry some spin 1/2 quantum number. It's kind of it's fractionized expectation from this N vector, which is the unit vector in the nonlinear CP1 model. And this is the scalar density. And the point is that if some kind of fractionized phase exists in certain spin model, then there will be an emergent U1 gate field. And this emergent U1 gate field will be very special for this DQCP phenomena beyond the non-loss paradigm. And it will contribute, for example, some extremely large anomaly exponents in the quantum critical region. So that's what we are looking for in the environment simulations. A few years ago, almost 10 years ago, Anders Sandvik proposed explicit model that can be solved by using quantum and color method, namely this JQ model. So it contains two terms. The first term just the usual anti-magnetic interaction. So if the J term dominant, you will expect some ground state like this. But he introduced another Q term, which is like a Plaquette term. So if Q term dominant, it will prefer some ground state like this, kind of so-called balance on the solid order. And at a certain ratio of J over Q, there's a common phase transition. Actually, it's a second order phase transition directly from this neo order to this BBS order, which is forbidden by non-loss paradigm. And this gauge field will in principle emerge in such kind of model. But this model is very artificial and it's kind of not very realistic. And the model we're more interested in for high TC problem probably is this so-called J1, J2 model. Because for several reasons, because in the high TC Kubrick's, there's T prime, so this naturally the J should be there. On the other hand, we argue that this J2 might also mimic some frustration introduced by the doped holon. This model is kind of very important for realistic purpose, and also some organic material can realize this model. It's very hard to study just because of the sign problem. It cannot be solved by quantum Monte Carlo calculation similar to the previous JQ one, which is sign problem free. But this model also has two different effects. If J1 is dominant, it's very simple, just like this uniform magnetic new order. And if J2 is dominant, it's just like this collinear order. So it's two very simple classical orders. And if you perform some linear calculation, you will find there's actually first order translation at J2 over J1 equal to 0.5. But for a long time, people kind of argue that because extremely strong quantum fluctuation in this region, this mean field calculation is not reliable. So there might be some interesting physics around this maximally frustrated region. So it's actually become a puzzle for more than two decades. And very recently, 4 years ago, I think, 3 years ago, there's a DMRG calculation because in the past 10 years, this development of computer science allow us to do some DMRG or more heavy numerical calculation to detect these exotic systems on some relatively small system. So this is a calculation from Lian Valens group. Basically, they consider some like a 10 leg ladder, but because DMRG is still some variation calculation for small class with open boundary condition. So in their calculation, they argue that in the intermediate region, there could be a quantum spin liquid, and in particular, it's a Zeta spin liquid with a spin triplet and a spin singlet gap. Last year, another group, also from Santa Barbara, Nancy Fisher and Donna Chen, and her postdocs, basically, they performed some SU2 symmetric DMRG calculation, and they claim the previous DMRG calculation because they don't use the SU2 symmetry. It's not converged well. And they claim in their new calculation, they find some Parquet VBS order when they consider this pin field on the boundary and smoothly reduce the pin field. They still saw some Parquet VBS order in the middle. And here, they also see some gapless region, and originally they argued might be some gapless thing. So, in both the calculation, both DMRG calculation of this small cluster, basically, I think also up to, here they just show this very controlled six cylinder results. The previous paper, they have 10 cylinders. This is 10 legs. The problem is that we don't have a thermodynamic answers, and all these DMRG calculations, they are kind of suffer from this finite size effect and boundary effect. And actually, even for this open boundary system on some 10 by 10 or 8 by 10 system, the convergence is not going to be have some problem because the DMRG calculation is also some variational calculation. In principle, it will suffer by this local minimum problem. Okay, so if we want to see some interesting physics here, in principle, kind of, namely, if we believe here there are some new phase or here at least all these calculations show there's no first order transition here. And obviously we need some framework beyond this Lambda's paradigm. Otherwise, there's no way to understand the physics in this region. So, yeah, before you introduce this numerical method called the tensor for the Dirac stick, let me just remind you what's the paradigm of Lambda. So in Lambda's paradigm, we usually think about a condensed matter system, like, for example, the spin 1/2 system. Described by some certain called a trial wave function. Basically, it's a product wave function. And on each side I, we have an order parameter u up and an order parameter u down. And the mean field wave function is very simple, just a tensor product of order wave function on a single side. And then you just do energy minimization. For example, for this 2+1D transverse IC model, you will find a very good phase diagram. At least it predicts the second order phase transition. And also it gives some exponent, although the exponent is kind of bigger than the exact quantum Carlo calculation. But qualitatively, it gives rise to the correct behavior for this model. But this method has some limitation because any phase and a phase transition beyond the Lambda term cannot be captured. For example, this topological order and the topological phase transition cannot be captured by this Lambda paradigm. And also this DQCP also cannot be captured by this Lambda paradigm. So if we think about there could be interesting physics in the G1 data model, we do need some new numerical method. So the so-called tensor product state, actually you can think about it's some generalization of this mean field ansatz. So for the mean field ansatz, we can take a slightly different view. You think about, again, for a spin 1/2 system with spin up and down each side, and you can think about the wavefront just a product of some complex number. If you have a spin up, it's a number, complex number u up, and if it's a spin down, it's a complex number u down. And the wave function just a multiplication of all these numbers. But this wave function is very simple because you can draw just here. Each side there is decoupled, or in some fancy language, there's no entanglement. And in 1D, people found that the DMRG method, the density matrix representation group method, would be very efficient and can almost solve all the 1D problems. So actually, the underlying variational ansatz corresponding to this DMRG algorithm, basically it's so-called a matrix product state. You can think about because this complex number u up and u down don't have enough information, so you need to replace them with some matrix a up and a down. So the matrix a up, you can think about it has a dimension d. So d we call the bounded dimension. And basically, if it's a complex matrix, you have d squared variational parameter for each of these matrices. So in total, there are 2d squared. And then you can just assume the wave function on the, any given, like for example, eigen basis, just a product of these matrices, and take a trace for periodic of finite condition. And then you do variational ansatz, and then you can find much better results. And the reason it works in 1D, because this kind of ansatz can encode some entanglement in the system. When you cut the boundary, you not like here, there's no entanglement at all. But in this ansatz, there are entanglements in this internal bound. And typically, we just use this kind of three-leg guides to describe this matrix. So this M is the physical indices, can be up or down. This alpha beta is the internal indices. So when we connect these internal indices, means we sum over all the indices. Okay. From this picture, it's very obvious that in higher dimension, you can just draw more legs. For example, in 2+1D on a square lattice, we just have left, right, and up and down. So basically, there are four inner legs and one physical leg stick out. And the wave function just the tensor trace of this tensor network, so which means you sum over all the internal indices. and then leave this physical index open. Once you fix all these physical indices, it becomes complex enough. And on the periodic boundary condition, you can just trace over this left, right, and up. Okay. So that's the ansatz. And but the question is that why such kind of ansatz might be useful for a strongly correlated system. So there is a quantum informational point of view. You can think about this ansatz can be constructed in some slightly different way. You can think about you're starting from some parent state. The parent state basically you think about on each side, it has a split into four sublattices. And each neighbor sublattice they form is the maximally entangled state. And this is you prepare product state. Okay, so this I just like, for example, it's Q-dis model with D degree freedom, 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus D. Then you just add a projection on the each physical site. So the physical meaning is that you pull back this information from this internal channel. Maximally entangled boundary is like some teleportation channel. When you act this projection on it, you kind of project back this internal state into the physical state. But later I will show you some more explicit meaning of this construction. It's a generalization of this Slew pattern. For example, there are models that you can think about. Sometimes we call it AKP model. You can think about this D just a tool, so each pair just a singlet. And if you project the maximally symmetric space, you produce this so-called AKLT model. Such kind of model, such a kind of wave function in general, you can argue it's always satisfied area law, because before you apply the projection, when you cut the bound, you only cut along this boundary of this area. So that's why the entropy is always proportional to this length of the region. And after projection, sometimes you can get some constant suppression. So the constant suppression actually is called the topological engine. And such kind of ansatz we show it can efficiently represent a large class of states, for example, some topological, non-parallel topological states and symmetric protected topological states. And also have achieved some success in some realistic model. For example, the Hubbard and the TJ1 model on Honeycomb is basically we find that if we dope it with certain ratio U over T or T of T over J, we will find either D plus ID superconductivity or P plus ID superconductivity. And also there are some realistic material. And all these variational calculations, the ground state energy is intrinsically consistent with the DMRG calculation on small cluster as well. Okay, so now we try to apply this method to this G1J2 model. So we designed the following ansatz. So the purpose for this kind of A, B, C, D sublattice, we try to encode all the possible competing order for the balance bound solid state, because basically we have the Coulomb dimer state of Parquet. So this state might spontaneous break this translation or C4-rotation symmetry. So the ABCD for sublattice structure is enough to encode all these possible competing order. So then we use some so-called cluster update algorithm to find the ground state. Basically, it's a projection method. It's kind of we start from some tensor product state like this. And then you do this imaginary time evolution, and when this toggle to infinity, you in principle can find this ground state, just like a project on the column. But in each step, you just do some small delta pore evolution in the imaginary time. So the delta pores, small delta pores, that can be viewed as some quantum circuits act on this bond. And if you have a J2 term, you can decompose them into teleportation on J1, on 2J1. So the class operator basically kind of will try to truncate the boundary dimension after you apply this circuit with respect to this small cluster. And after you're doing this for kind of millions of steps, you can converge it to some ground states. And then we can simulate the Bronson energy by using some normalization-based methods. So I don't have time to tell you the detail, but I just show you the results.
This is already for infinite example.
Yeah, it's just like a variation of the color. So you have a thermodynamic limit ansatz through this kind of matter time. So it's for infinite size.
But your tensors are always here, stable.
Yeah, the tensor there are four types of different tensors.
Yeah.
A, B, C, D. Yeah. So the connection.
But you go to very high one dimensions within each
dimension. Oh, yeah. So here we use the D below 9. So that's the limits we can push. So here we also have to do this one by L scaling. So once we get a ground state, we simulate the ground state energy on some given small system size. For example, like 8 by 8, 16 by 16, and up to 32 by 32. Just like very different color. We have some of the limit ansatz. We still simulate energy on some small cost. But 32 and 32, we believe it's big enough to see some long, low energy behavior.
I think the serious problem is that the tensor is only the nearest neighbor.
Right.
But however, because the bound dimension is high,
right.
It's possible to simulate the second neighbor.
Right. So this is just like this linear time evolution. Once you have this teleportation picture, you can include this kind of GA2, this diagonal bond. Of course, in principle, you can imagine some complex tensor include this diagonal bond. But then the algorithm, there's no controlled algorithm for that case. All the operators can simulate this planar ground. Basically, we find this ground energy actually intrinsically consistent with this exact diagonalization. So actually, you can see this comparison with the even for small size. So most surprisingly, even for very small size, like 4 by 4 or 6 by 6, the energy difference is already very small. But of course, if you go to a bigger size, the error become even smaller. And also our ground energy is lower than this best version of the color energy. I think that's first did by Sorillas group like 15 years ago. Okay, so this is the ground energy. We also carefully benchmark this ground energy on a few small clusters, like 8x8 and 16x16. But for DMRG and this VMC with some length of projection, we only have 8x8 and 10x10 and 14x14. So the result is that on this small system size, our ground energy basically kind of consistent with the DMRG, and in some cases kind of in between this DMRG and the BMC with length loss projection. But if we go to the bigger system size, for example, this 16 by 16, this pink curve, and this blue curve. So you see on bigger size, our ansatz basically get a low energy if we do the extrapolation. So this DC is some kind of cutoff, some kind of number of states which we keep in this tensor normalization, and basically we needed to extrapolate this DC equal to infinite, this energy will convert it to some constant value. And if we do some this kind of extrapolation, we see that actually this larger system size, our energy is lower than this previous bounds, especially in this 0.5. J2.55J1. And for this 0.5J1, it's kind of also consistent with the best BMC calculation with the Lanczos projection. So the Lanczos projection method has been used recently to improve this BMC result. And it turns out to be the, they can derive the best energy on this small cluster. 10 by 10 or 14 by 14. So all this evidence shows our tensor ansatz actually pretty good and can tell us have some interesting properties of the ground state of the system. So now we try to measure some physical quantities like this anthropomagnetic order and this spin-spin correlation.
The DMRG, the L was the width of the strip, is that right?
Oh, it's not, sorry, yeah, I'm a little bit confused. So so the arrow is, so this two line, I think one is from DMRG, one from BMC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But L represents the width of the, it's an infinite strip with the width 8, is that what it is? It's a different geometry, right? I'm just wondering how you compare your.
Oh, they also have this 10 by 10 results. But with with open body condition.
Yeah.
So our calculation are for periodic body condition.
So then how do you compare on the open body
works? Right, so this VMC calculation also with PBC periodic body condition. So we assume this DMRG energy on this like 10 by 10 cluster, the boundary effect is not so important. But of course, yeah, you will see that this PBC energy actually it is slightly lower than the DMRG. So here our answer at least just I can claim it's compatible with this VMC with length source projection. So it's the lowest variation energy we know so far. Then we look at this so-called anthropomagnetic correlation. So we also do this one way of scaling, and we see that there is a critical value of J2 over J1, like point around 0.53. So we see that this critical point actually much bigger than the one observed in the DMRG calculation. DMRG calculation just like 0.45 around. So the we think the reason is that in the DMRG calculation, in that region it's not so well converged. Actually, we will carefully compare this ground energy in that region. Our energy is lower than DMRG. Beyond this 0.53, there's no magnetic order at all. And we can also verify this by look at this spin-spin correlation. So basically, beyond this critical point, we find this spin-spin correlation exponentially decay. And below it, it has non-ring order. And approaching this critical point, it has a power law behavior.
What about the pi zero order
system? I thought your BNC, your tensor product, was for infinite system.
But when we put it in any simulation, we need to simulate it on a finite cluster, and then extrapolate it, just like very simple color. You can give the energy some reliable energy on some bigger but finite cluster. Then we just do this one way.
Sorry, but do you optimize the tensors for the as if they were embedded in an infinite system, and then you use them like for a finite lattice, or do you optimize them on a finite lattice?
We optimize it on an infinite lattice. Yeah. So the answer is somewhat limited answer. So we just try to read out this information from this finite class and then do some one-way of scaling information. So here's this maximum size, the setting to size. So the next thing we look at is that this diamond-diamond correlation. So we define this diamond-diamond correlator in the following way. And this diamond-diamond correlator has a property that actually it's include the contribution from the Coulomb order and the Plaquet order. So either of these BDS order can in principle contribute to this diamond-diamond correlation. And very surprisingly, actually, we also see a power law decay behavior in this critical region after 0.53. So this beta function is about 1/2 if we fit the exponent, this beta exponent is about 1/2. about 1.5. Okay, so all these results actually suggest a possible one state, because this kind of behavior shows the system have a spin signaling gap. But explain the key of the spin-spin correlation. There's no spin signaling gap. Yeah. But the explain the key of the spin correlation shows there's a spin triplet gap. So that's only consistent with a possible U1 spin, because for zero spin triplet, in principle, in both the singlet and triplet channel, we will see a gap, and both this spin-spin correlation and lambda-lambda correlation to the decay exponential. So the inconsistency of the DMRG actually calculation with and without the acyclic symmetry basically is kind of they are inconsistent in this diamond correlation. So in the acyclic symmetric DMRG calculation, they claim they have lower energy and this diamond correlation also decay power, not exponential.
So did you recover the kind of the phase when you get larger J2, or you have to put it in?
If it's very large J2, just like collinear phase. Yeah, it's in our calculation, we can see some like first order transition and configuration.
So what is the range of that spin liquid phase in the J1 by J1?
I think it's beyond 0.6. It's 0.6 something, by the way. We don't have data points. We can simulate that with 0.6. So we have some 0.65, and we already see this collinear. So
you see it in
the beginning, yeah. From DMRG, it's like 0.63, I think. There's some value. We also carefully examine all these spectral VBS order, all of them vanish. So this kind of behavior suggests it might be a possible spin liquid. You want spin, because there's no single gap. But on the other hand, we carefully fit this critical exponent by using this kind of universal scaling function. And very surprisingly, we find this critical exponent nu and eta actually intrinsic close to the JQ model with a very similar system size, like up to 32 by 32. So then we conjecture that the possible reading is that this U1 spin liquid could be unstable, and at very long wavelengths, there could be some EBS order developed with exponentially small amplitude. This is consistent with the picture of the instant gap for U1 gauge field. If we think about, if we follow Poiseuille curve's calculation, and actually its formal mass is proportional to, it's a function like exponential U1 minus 1 over g squared. So if we go to the strong coupling limit, the photon gap could be exponentially small. Basically, the photon gap is kind of proportional to this amplitude of the VBS order. So that might be the reason why we cannot see this static VBS order for small cluster. There's a bigger kind of bigger region for this energy landscape in some very big but not infinite system. You will see this kind of decombinant behavior for this U1 order. But if you really go to the infinite size limit, maybe some exponentially small VBS order can develop. So that's our conjecture for the possible explanation from this numerical calculation. So to confirm this kind of picture, we further consider some rather simple one parameter variation approach based on this tensor product state. So this
correlation was for the dimer or diamond? Was it for the Plaquette order or the dimer order? Columnar dimer order.
Yeah, we only show this so called diamond-diamond correlation. It includes the contribution from both.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but we have some separate data for this columnar order, and there's no columnar order. So we think it should be contributed from this Plaquette. So, but that's consistent with the acyclic symmetric DMRG. they also collect various packages. So to verify this connection for this unstable U1 spin, so we further think about some a single parameter variational states controlled by this tensor product. So the constraint is very simple. We think about some tensor just with bounded dimension 3. So the bounded dimension 3, you can think about this 2 with something like a vacuum in the internal channel. And this 0 and 1 corresponding to spin up and down. So it's really like a kind of a slow particle picture. And the purpose is trying to control some short-term the RBB state. And here, for example, if we design the projection P1 just with 4 non-managed components. So the color of this component means that the red color represents this up or down. So which means if we have spin up here, then it's a better function. You have a non-managed 0 component, and you have spin down, you have a non-managed 1 component. The black is just this vacuum. Then you make a tensor construction for this tensor. You can derive a state which is very similar to this Bokstad Q Wilson short time model, but with spin singlet. So the diamond equilibrium is replaced by a spin singlet. So it's not an orthogonal diamond state, just some short RVD with this non orthogonal spin basis. But this kind of answer is not general enough because, in principle, quantum fluctuation can induce further longer kind of RBB configuration. So, in order to incorporate this longer range RBB, we can further add some components we represent by this blue line. So basically, just needed to slightly modify this projection. So, in the original projection, we only allowed 4 non managed configuration. But now, we allow this 8 more non-managed configuration. And with this configuration, it's basically just like a teleportation. It will generate a longer range RBB. For example, this Ixion function is just means it's an anti-symmetric function. And if you, for example, if you this red line connect with this blue line, then it can go through this corner and connect with another blue line, and finally connect with another red line. So you can generate this long range.
What are the diagonal lines supposed to be?
You mean diagonal?
Yeah, there. Okay.
Oh, you mean this?
The first line going at 45-degree angle.
Oh, you mean this one?
Oh, no.
The red diagonal.
Oh, you mean this one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This one I explained here. It's kind of this stick out. It's a physical.
Oh, that's the physical.
Yeah, that's the physical indices. Yeah. So this blue line is always in the internal.
Right.
And this internal indices. So this physical indices kind of just
sticking out.
Yeah, stick out. So in this first configuration, it's very simple. Just a projection. We projected this spin up to the internal zero and then spin. Spin down to internal 1, and then by counter this tensor, you can make a short run RBB. But by counter this, you can make some short run RBB with exponential decay in terms of this length, the amplitude of exponential decay. Yeah, so then we, in general, we can have a variational parameter to control this decay. So it can have a complex variational parameter C. And then we just minimize the energy with respect to this C. And very interesting, we find that the system actually prefers to have a real C. So if C is real, actually, this ansatz is a special class of this Leandro through Anderson kind of short range RBB state. And actually, it's a sign problem free. And this is just a picture to show how this long range RBB can be created through this teleportation. And when we minimize energy, we can see this RBB amplitude decays magically fast, so as we designed for this ansatz. And most surprisingly, that just with this kind of single, yeah, just with a single parameter, we can find this Gronsk energy very good. Actually, just like I think just yeah, almost 1% deviate from this best version actually with the general answers is D to 9. But here we only have one version of time. Yeah, here is some vice some flux set. Yeah, so let me ignore this part. Basically we did this simulation with some different geometry, but here for this answers we do. We just get energy on this some kind of cylinder geometry with 4, 6, and 8. But of course, once we derive this optimal C, we can control this Gronsk energy for these states on some cylindrical bicylindrical bands as well. And so the most striking point is that even with a single parameter, we already get this very good energy. So we can conjecture that. Such a state could be a meta-stable state. And such a state actually consistent with the property we observed from this D9 tensor product state calculation. For example, it has a power law decay for this diamond-diamond correlation. And the interesting thing actually, we see that although it's a kind of U1 phase, we still can define some Bayesian set on both directions. And we see that if it's if we are in the in different sector, let me see. So the so there are a plus and minus. There are two different sectors, and in different sectors, this diamond-diamond correlation have slightly different behavior. So basically, in this I think in the right. So in this even sector, we see this power law decay of the diamond-diamond correlation.
I see. In one sector, you have power law, in other exponential decay.
Right. So so here let me just explain why we only have the we claim it's kind of like you want to, because from this answers you can rigorously prove that any A sub X pairing will vanish because due to some asymmetrical construction for this TPS answers, A sub X is exactly zero, so it's consistent with a kind of you want to. And if we compute this so-called internal entropy, actually we find some very interesting behavior that have a log L correction. So if you include this log L correction, you will see a bit like this. But sometimes people, because this log L correction will be very, very weak, and sometimes people want to use a linear kind of curve to fit this. And actually you find some negative intersection, and the intersection actually is surprisingly very close to log 2. So that's I guess that's why the reason that previous DMRG calculation claims a little spin. But here just to show an explicit example that even it's a U1 spin equilibrium, it can still have a non-zero constant intersection, and this should be not called a Hawking action for this guy. So basically, Dufrin has the logarithm.
So in the first line you have this 1/2 log L.
Right.
Why is 1/2?
Just argument from this U1 gauge fluctuation. You have this log L contribution with some 1/2 per time.
But why 1/2?
Yeah, just think about you have a region with some close U1 loop. And I think the argument is that let me see.
Is this region without corners, or it's? I mean, this is like a numerical thing, so you have corners, right? So this is a cloud.
Oh, you mean here? No. this is not, we don't have corner. This is, I think it's kind of a contribution for PBC system. Yeah, you just think about you have a region and there are some you want loop out the region, some loop inside the region, and this kind of fluctuation can be revised to this edge node.
So half looks too universal. It's a very specific number.
I think the number of a string going through the boundary is proportional to L.
Yeah.
But however, the total outgoing string and incoming string should be restricted to zero. So the what I'm trying to say the if there's no restriction, the number of a string going out and going in, the fluctuation like square root L is like a random one.
I see.
The number of strings L, but the plus the net string out in is a square root L. But the restriction is that it should be restricted to zero,
mm-hmm.
Because the string can no ending at the time.
Yeah, but actually from this data, I think this
Is
kind of improvement of the log error correction is still very weak.
Yeah.
So we just add this time as well.
This is I don't know in this case it's really there because for the pure U1-gate theory, the U1-gate field may compute this. But if you have a spin up, then things spin up also some handle.
Yeah, so here it's a quadratic RBD, so there's no Dirac.
Yeah.
If there's
other gapless mode, if in your additional gauge mode, there's other gapless mode,
right.
Then things, I don't know.
Right. But it's not obvious. It's if you make a linear fit, you will find something very close to minus logic. So yeah, that kind of resolve the controversial people observed in BMRG. So the scenario is that that from this single parameter version ansatz, actually we show this U1 spin that has pretty good version in it. So then, based on our previous kind of general purpose D9 tensor product state calculation, which also support this kind of U1 spin scenario, and we know this due to the internet effect is unstable at long wavelengths. Therefore, in the end, some exponentially small VBS order by development and they should fit this scenario of this DQC proposed by Sandra and Sophie.
Something has a question.
So, does the previous answers include this the second answer? D equal 9 answers? Is
you mean the D equal to 9 answers?
Yeah, does it include this? Is it general enough to?
Oh yeah, of course, yeah. Here just one parameter. So we actually in the imaginary timing routine we can start from this ansatz. Yeah, as kind of initial state. Then you can do an imaginary timing routine, you can get some improved energy.
In the second ansatz you suppress the instanton by hand.
Right. So in this one parameter ansatz so we suppress instanton by hand. Just a one parameter. So this D equal 9 calculation have like almost 10,000 direction of balance. So we hope they are going to include more quantum fluctuations. But basically this spin correlation, diamond correlation, actually they are quite the same. Yeah. Actually for this power, I think for the diamond correlation, there's some decay power. This two power actually also very close. Yeah, so this power is like around 1.3. So in our D equal 9 calculation, this power, I think. Oh, it's a little bit bigger, it's around 2, I think. The ratio J over J1. The change in general around 2. So basically here's the story for this G1 model based on and you need marker results. So I want to say something from some other calculation. For example, if you use this cell particle construction by using either string boson version of Kahlo or string boson version of Kahlo, both of them actually suggests gapless filling rate. But for the boson, that's you can optimize this energy on some small cluster because it has some power and it supports this U1 spin. And for the cell boson, that's actually it's a gapless Z2 spin. But this gapless Z2 spin is just it's kind of like a Z2 spin with a Dirac form. But this Bison gap actually very small in that sense. So it could be the reason why eventually this Bison gap might close. And if you add more quantum fluctuation in that sense, and end up with some U1 spin equilibrium, which is unstable, and develop the DBS order and non-wavelengths. So that's a possible scenario. So this is some kind of general argument from this PSG study from this string boson, so boson ansatz. If we really want to get this Z2 spin equilibrium, actually we show that there is a possible scenario if we break the C4 rotational symmetry. So the scenario is that in this usual DQCP, we just proliferate the skirmion. But if we proliferate the bound state of the skirmion and the spinner, then we can get a C2 spin equilibrium. So, in this scenario, actually, we analyze the TSG, we must break this C4 rotational symmetry. So, there's a suggestion if we add some anisotropy in the J1 data model, for example, the J1 along X and Y direction, they are different. They might be stable at such a non-zero. Finally, still it's an open question whether this DQCP exists in Cooper's or not. So far we don't have solid evidence for it. But I think from this linear resistivity, Anderson argued it's evidence for DQCP, but it's not obvious. Okay, thanks.
Questions?
So do you understand why certain sectors are gapped in the dimer-dimer, whereas others aren't around
that? Sorry,
I think
we're you mean the dimer-dimer correlation?
Yeah, so as you showed, certain sectors are gapped.
Oh, yeah, for the particular U1, yes. So there's a even odd effect. Kind of we can define this flux sector. Plus or minus is kind of your order is a U1 spin, but you can still insert your flux times over there. And I think that these two different sector right. So I think the possible reason is that it could be a finite size effect because we do the simulation on this finite cylinder. So the conjecture is that if we take the limit of infinite, then this two should have the same behavior. And on finite cylinder, you will see some sector is gapped, some sector is gapless. So that might be. Might be the reason that in DMRG calculation, some DMRG calculation they claim they see some gap in behavior for the spin zero set. And the A2 DMRG shows its gapless behavior, like power behavior, some kind of correlation. Because they encounter the cylinder charge. So here we just examine this U1 and that's with cylinder charge.
What you're saying at the end of the day is that the longest sizes, largest sizes, would have a gap because it's U1 compliant.
Right, but you also need to increase the width of the cylinder. Yeah. But Actually, we tried some of the MVP limit calculation, and we do see this diamond-diamond correlation is powerful. If we do this 32 by 32 geometry on the torus, it's powerful. But just on this cylinder, we see the kind of strange behavior for different sets and different properties.
Is it possible to measure the excitation energy gap by going to excited states within this tensor approach? You have been focusing on ground state.
Right.
EMRG and so on. Let's talk about this.
Right. Yeah, so in principle, you need to try to construct this variation ansatz.
But excited states.
Yeah, to describe the excited state. So we know how to do that exactly for some particular case like topological phases, topological order phases. But for a general system in 1D framework, should have some called orthogonal phases or tangent phases method. Kind of you consider some MPS, which is orthogonal to the ground state. Then you can show the dispersion for various spin systems. But so far, just limited in 1D. So in 2D, it's more complicated. You can think about this tensor with some impurity. And describe this kind of excitation. But another more promising method, I think, is think about this tensor ansatz. It's like a mean field ansatz. And you can think about the fluctuation of this tensor. So it's like try to develop some field theory based on that. And because this tensor, the boundary dimension in D, there's naturally some SUD gauge symmetry. If we take the D larger limit, it's like hopefully could be some larger calculation. But we haven't tried that. So I think that could be very promising if we can develop a field theory based on such kind of generalizing field ansatz.
So I have another question. You wrote down an analytic tensor ansatz with one variation of parameters.
Right.
Is it possible to map it into a completely standard RBB basis?
Oh, yeah.
And then for example, you know, Leon Dusa Anderson.
Yeah.
They have very simple power laws.
Right.
So you can convert it into
that. Yeah. In that point of view, it's just a special because here at the beginning we construct this ansatz, so we assume complex number C. But after any minimization, we find C is real.
Okay. Now suppose you have minimized, you have
right. Yeah. So suppose C is real, then this RBB just like Leon Dusa Anderson wave function with expansion. Of this
exponential.
Yeah.
But A to B is beta is always zero.
And A B.
You can have a real number. The amplitude is real. It's positive.
Yeah, it's positive actually.
I see. So you can translate your wave function into RBB basis.
Right. Actually, you did some calculation kind of starting from this ansatz and add more parameters in the loop basis. And you can further improve that. But then you get some gross energy in between of this value and the D to 9 down. Maybe 4, 8, 9 something, or 4, yeah. I don't
know. So validation, you produce long-range correlation?
Here, in this sense, there's no long-range, it's just experimentation.
But you can tune the
If you improve this long range kind of when we optimize this ansatz, because we consider from this tensor, so it's hard to. At the moment, we don't know how to improve this power. This particular concept, you only have expanded. But the advantage is that we allow complex amplitude. But just after minimization for some reason, it prefers this rewrap.
So this complex amplitude, will it imply chiral spin liquid?
Yeah.
You're
so if
that
it's real, it kind of suggests that the system prefers some
non-chiral.
Some non-chirals.
There are no more questions. Thank you once again.